Now, back to the Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. It's hour number three of the Big Show. If you missed anything from the first 2 hours, don't forget you can find the Big Show wherever you get your podcasts. The hourly podcasts are put up immediately after they conclude. And you can find the Big Show on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. We're taking a deep breath in between game days. Game two of the Battle of Alberta goes tomorrow from the Saddle Dome. Flames and Oilers at 8:30 tonight. The night begins at 5 o'clock with the Lightning and Panthers, 7:30, more like 7:50. It's the Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues. To talk about a little bit of hockey, but really all things sports and entertainment. He's our life insider. You know him, you love him, as Adnan Virk from MLB and NHL Network. And he joins us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Virk, how are you, sir?
My guy's back. Will Nault. Love the pictures on IG. Thrilled that you and your lady had such a good time. Had fun with Sandra pinch hitting, of course, and Logan carrying the ship. But it's good that you're back, buddy. Let's go, Flames.
Well, I love to be back and love to be chatting with you as always, my friend. And, you know, it's always fun chatting with somebody who's on the East Coast. I mean, this game is a little bit later for you. Like, where are we at in terms of these, 10:30, 9:30 Eastern starts? Like, are you a little bit sleep deprived right now? Like, where are we at?
Yeah, it's not great. I got to be honest with you. What I did was yesterday, I thought I made the calculated decision because I watched the first period and saw the Flames of 3-1 and said, okay, I'm good. Like, there's no way the Oilers are going to come back. So I went to bed and then woke up today just flabbergasted by the 9-6 score and still felt like, well, I didn't miss too much. I missed, obviously, a lot of goals and some really exciting hockey, but I went to bed thinking the Flames would win, and the Flames did win. But when I saw the manner in which they won and the fact they relinquished a 6-2 lead, the fact that Oilers came back, I do wish I was able to stay awake for that one. But a good result all around. Thank God the Flames won.
Yeah, and a bit chaotic. I don't know if we'll see 15 goals again at any point in this series. But it was a lot of fun. And 31 years, I guess that was the wait, was absolute chaos in game number one. Big picture, like, what stuck out to you in the Stanley Cup playoffs as we're now into round two and the final eight? I'm sure a lot of conversation as well in the United States about the Battle of Florida.
No question. I don't know about you and Logan specifically, but I found a lot of guys from the office popping out their chest going, oh, I got my picks right. And I said, well, yeah, most of us did. Like, the big takeaway for me was there was no shocking, jarring upset, right? The Panthers had lost, then yes, we would all have been stunned. I think if the Flames had lost the Stars, that would have been an eyebrow raise. But generally speaking, when you look at every single one of those first rounds, you go, yeah, that's about what I thought. People picked the Lightning to beat the Leafs, even if the Leafs had home ice, and that's exactly what happened. Virtually every series, the Blues and Wild figured to be close. Blues would win. They do so in six. So I think now with the second round, you go, okay, I think the best teams really did prevail, so we should get some very tight hockey the rest of the way. And you mentioned the Sunshine State Showdown. Like, I, of course, am in love with the Battle of Alberta. But around the office, everyone is talking about Tampa Bay versus Florida, and the whole key is tonight. Listen, Florida's got to win this game. You cannot go down 0-2, especially when you're the home team. And the fact they got these back-to-backs now, I mean, that's just crazy with the schedule near Tampa, because they got this concert in town, just porous work by Tampa. Come on, you guys are in the playoffs every year. Figure it out. You should make sure that those dates are available for all your hockey games right down at Amalie Arena. But I hope Florida wins tonight. Like I said, they lose and they go down 0-2. That would be a hole they cannot dig out of. We all know what a great series that was a year ago. Six games, and you felt like in some ways Florida could have won that series. But if they lose tonight, it's ball game.
We got your, your NHL Network co-worker, Mike Rupp, coming on with us tomorrow. So you're going to have to put in a good word for us, okay?
Rupp is the best, man. He's so great. He's kind of like me. He'll never say no to a phone hit. You'll see him in the hallways. Like, what is he doing? I'm like, oh, he's on with, whenever the radio station is in Nashville or in Tampa or in Florida. I'm like, oh, Mike Rupp's available. Boom. I hear him all the time on NHL Network Radio and Sirius. He does a fantastic job with my old buddy, Steve Colia. So Rupp is, he's salt of the earth, man. You know how some people, they're exactly as you'd expect, lunch bucket, lunch pail kind of guy. That's Mike Rupp. You figure him 5 o'clock shadow, good guy, remembers everyone's names, pat on the back, hard worker. That is Mike Rupp to a T. So I look forward to you guys talking to our great storyteller. Get him to tell some stories about his old days. He told me a wrestling story recently, actually. I can't remember. They basically went to like a Monday Night Raw show. He showed up the next day hungover. But I can't remember exactly the details of it. But you can ask him. Just ask him. Adnan says you're a big fan of wrestling. Give me a story of how wrestling and hockey intertwine. That'll tee him up well enough.
Hey, Rupper, Adnan says you're a drunk and you show up to work hungover all the time.
Yeah, that's what we're going to go with instead.
Exactly. Hey, listen, don't let the facts get the way of a good story, okay? Yeah. That's the bottom. Rupper can spin a yarn.
Funny that you, all those words that you used to describe him as a person and an analyst kind of exactly the same as I remember Mike Rupp. I would have used probably scary and intimidating as well, but those are similar words to what he was as a player. I know you would have seen a lot of him being a Flyers fan.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's always emblematic of the way the guy is. Like, I always find that interesting. Like, you meet certain guys, and they kind of their personality resembles their style of play. Like, Mike Johnson does a phenomenal job. Like, he's very smooth. And I'm like, yeah, on the ice, he's a very smooth skater, very silky smooth, well-liked teammate, very smart, analytically savvy. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That's exactly what I've expected out of Mike Johnson. Darren Pang, 5'5", 140, phenomenal guy. Holy jumping, great one-liners. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I expect Darren Pang as a goalie and as a person. And Mike Rupp, you're right, to a T. He's exactly what you'd expect. It's very rare that you meet a guy and go, oh, he's a lot more gregarious than I thought, or he's a lot more quieter than I thought. Like, I worked with Scott Stevens a little bit, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I thought for Scott Stevens. Quiet, intense, very bright, but like kind of in his own shell. I'm like, yeah, that's guy. I would have been shocked if he was yammering on like me. I'm like, no, that's not Scott Stevens. He kind of stays in his shell. And, of course, it was tough to work with him the whole time. I just kept pitching when he just laid out Lindros. That unbelievable hit just killed me. I remember listening on the radio. I just started crying. I'm like, no! Scott Stevens just ruined Eric Lindros' career. But, yeah, Rupper is exactly what you expect. Grinder. I love it. Look, I will say this. The only surprise is this, I should say, is the enforcers. Those guys are a little bit different because Stu Grimson is a sweetheart, and that's shocking because on the ice, Stu Grimson was a freaking maniac. Like, I still have nightmares of Stu Grimson. And as a person, like, first up, great salad, tall, thin, like, very lean. I'm like, oh, he's not like a thick, muscular guy.
Yeah.
Like, Rupper's rugged. Like, Stu Grimson is like a beanpole, tall, skinny, but just, like, if I put a stick on him, I'd be terrified. Like, he's a maniac. But, like, he's like an artist. Like, he loves artistic stuff. Every time he comes to town, he asks, hey, what's a good Broadway show to go check out? He loves to read. I'm like, Stu Grimson's the one guy. I'm like, okay, this was not the Grim Reaper that I was expecting. He said to me, it was just a cathartic thing on the ice to get it out. Ken Danico also like that too. Ken Danico's like a teddy bear. Yeah. Meet him on the ice with the Devils. That guy was a maniac.
Me and Will were talking yesterday. Of course, lots of Battle of Alberta chat, but we were kind of saying it feels like the Rangers and Hurricanes series was kind of falling to the wayside in terms of excitement. And I don't know that Game 1 yesterday changed anything in that regard.
I totally agree, fellas. If you said to me, of the four series, rank the ones you're most excited about, the first two that jump out are the Battle of Alberta and the Sunshine State Showdown. And a good number three is Avs Blues, just because I love the star power of Colorado. Like, I want to see Nathan MacKinnon make a big push towards the Final Four and finally get out of the second round. I love Nazem Kadri. Darcy Kemper, obviously Makar is an animal. Like, there's a lot of players to like on that team. And the Blues, I think, are a fascinating team. Like, they have 9 20-goal scorers. Ted Binnington found his groove back after it looked like Billy Husso would be the guy. I always loved Berubia, of course, former Flyer. So the fourth series, you're right, Rangers, Hurricanes, you're going to go, eh. Like, in this area, obviously I have a lot of Rangers fans around me, but watching that game, I'm like, oh, my God. It wasn't just that it was low scoring. The three of us know, listen, there can be a very good hockey game if it's 1-0. As long as there's plenty of scoring chances and great saves. Like, you guys saw that with Ottinger. Like, it was ridiculous what he was doing against the Flames, even though those were low-scoring games. And obviously Markstrom very good as well. But that game was like, no, this is just bland. Like, it was like, whoa, like vanilla yogurt. This was terrible. So thank God Carolina scored late and at least gave a little bit of energy and then completely looked sparked. All of a sudden they woke up that crowd and then, of course, went in overtime. So, yeah, I'm with you. Hurricanes Rangers, to me, it feels like the sleepiest of the four series. And it's not just the goals. I just don't think there was enough chances or enough buzz around the game.
Adnan Virk's our guest. I don't know if we have anything left on hockey. You got anything left on hockey? Actually, we should maybe ask. We were just talking about this in the last segment, and I teased it nicely that we had a Flyers fan coming up.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Your thoughts on Barry Trotz apparently interviewing in Philadelphia?
Fantastic. I mean, listen, what the Philadelphia has done is they tried to go with the veteran, but Alain Vigneault, I mean, just didn't work out. Like, AV after 2 years, like, okay, I'm good. Like, at first, he definitely makes an impact, but after that, like, he just checked out. I was talking to a friend of mine who's, this is a rare type of Adnan Virk NHL insider, but But a buddy of mine who works with the Flyers, and he goes, you don't understand. Like, towards when it looked like he was just falling off a cliff, Vigneault wasn't even showing them video. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, they were just going to practice and go home. I'm like, he was mailing it in. He's like, yeah, he knew. He's like, I'm about to get fired. I got a bunch of money coming to me. I'm like, okay, great. Well, let's make sure the next head coach has a little more of a work ethic involved. And one thing with Philadelphia is we all want teams that sizzle, and we want teams that scoring. And as I've said to you guys, Florida should be everyone's second favorite team. They're so much fun to watch. But let's be honest. Let's tighten things up defensively. The last 2 years in Philadelphia, that defense has been a sieve. And it's not just the defensemen. It's the forwards who don't play defense, like James Van Riemsdyk and others. There's like one Sean Couturier who's defensively conscious and a Selke trophy, you know, in the conversation all the time, previous winner. And then there's everybody else. So, you know, some of their A-list defensemen have not panned out. Provorov's kind of gone sideways. So I think Barry Trotz coming in there, hey, man, he would tighten things up defensively, make things easier for Carter Hart. Obviously, Mike Yeo was interim for a reason. I would love it. If I have a wish list, it's either Trotz or Coach Quenneville, and obviously with Joel, we don't know when the NHL is going to reinstate him or will they reinstate him. So if Trotz goes to Philly, I love it. I'm worried he might go to Winnipeg, but I hope it's Philly. Yeah,
I think it will be Winnipeg, just my gut. But, you know, I think the story of a Manitoba guy going home would be awesome too, but Philadelphia, I think, too, in terms of the hockey market and where the Flyers are. Barry Trotz going there would be a fun story as well. Shifting gears a little bit, good friend of yours and the manager of the Yankees. Like, the Yankees, are they ever going to lose again? Like, I know they lost their last game, but this is ridiculous what they're doing right now.
Well, this team's a juggernaut. Like, I can't believe they're going to win a World Series and my buddy's going to be the manager. Like, I might be on the float. You might be like, hey, I think we saw Verk. Like, he's out there. He's hanging out with Clay Holmes.
Tarps off, on the float. Waving around, yeah. Everything.
Yeah. Like, there's Verk with some pom-poms. I think he's wearing pinstripes. He's going, you know how jealous Boomer would be? Boomer, big Yankees fan. There's Verk hanging out there with J.J. LeMahieu. Listen, the Yankees right now are on pace for 122 wins. We're almost at the quarter pole mark of the season. I know it's not going to happen, but they're the best team in baseball. Aaron Judge is on pace for 63 home runs. The record holder in the American League is still Roger Maris with 61. How about the fact the Yankees offered Judge 7 years, $230 million, which I think is a very competitive offer. Like,
yeah.
We're going to give you $30 million a year. And by the way, you're 30 years old. Like, bro, 35, 36.
And you haven't been the healthiest.
Most ball players don't age well. No, exactly. I haven't been the healthiest either. So I was like, that's actually a pretty good deal. Like, I would have taken it. He's like, no, I'm good. Instead, he has just been unbelievable. He's going to get out there and win an MVP and then want to get paid. And by the way, I think it's a mistake if the Yankees give him 10 years, $300 million. I would stick to the 7 years, $230 million, but whatever. Right now, the guy has been incredible. Stanton has been excellent. A guy who, again, hasn't been the healthiest. But, God, his exit velocity, every time he hits that ball, like, it looks like he's about to mash it wherever it's going. LeMahieu's healthy after offseason hernia surgery. Rizzo, to me, has been a real surprise. 2 years, $32 million. You go, all right. $16 million a year. He's good defensively. He's got a good eye. But he doesn't have much power anymore. You know, his average has declined. No, the power's back. Like, the short porch, beautiful. But Rizzo's got double-digit home runs. He might hit 35 home runs, 40 home runs. Like, wow, I did not see that coming from Anthony Rizzo. Donaldson gives him a little bit of edge. They've improved their defense. A big thing under the radar is, at least as far as their catchers are concerned, because before, Gary Sanchez was so atrocious, not only defensive but also offensive. The guy couldn't hit. So now you got Trevino and Higashioka, and they're both really good defensively, and they've helped their pitching. And that's really the key here. I'm burying the lead. The pitching's been ridiculous. Like, Gerrit Cole's back. Like, he had three really shaky starts. Last four starts, the guy's been lights out. The story of the year in the American League in pitching is Nestor Cortes. Him and his mustache.
Yeah.
This guy is in the Cy Young conversation. He was supposed to be their fifth starter. Like, that's ridiculous. Severino's back. He was a two-time All-Star previously. And Jordan Montgomery's got an ERA around 3. So you've got a quartet of really good starters right there. And then their bullpen has a 1.5 ERA. Like, Clay Holmes is unhittable. Chapman is shaky at times, but he's still 8-for-8, like, in save opportunities. Like, the other day, he gave up a run against Baltimore. Fine, they still won the game. So for Booney right now, it's an embarrassment of riches. It's really impressive how the Yankees have gone from, like, I think they're a good team, 90 wins, to no, they're the best team in baseball, 105 wins. They're winning that division.
By the way, what's going on? Like, we can stop living in 1930s. Like, you know, what's with the allowing mustaches but no beards? Like, what's going on? Come on. It's unbelievable.
I'm completely with you. Well, you know, one thing about me is if I was a manager, I would be a player-friendly manager, right? Like, one of my favorite people is Joe Maddon.
Fellas.
When I called the Red Sox-Angels game the other day, I was looking in the dugout. We were walking the clubhouse. Like, they're so loose, and that's all because the manager. Like, Joe Maddon is such a chill guy. He's like, yeah, whatever, man. He's got, like, a faux hawk. He's got the cool glasses. Like, he was telling me, he goes, you know, some managers show up at noon. I was like, what? He's like, noon at a 7 o'clock game. And he goes, I don't need to show up in my underwear and look at the lineup for 3 hours. Like, I know what we're doing. I know where's everyone's hitting. Like, we're good. He says he gives the players like days off during the season. Like, hey boys, no BP today. Let's just go out there and go. Like, I think it's so important to have that kind of laid back style. The Angels obviously are in the mix right now. So I'm with you. Booney is a very laid back guy himself. I mean, that guy is about as funny as you get. Does great impressions. So I think that the players do feed off him, but you are right, Will. That whole concept of no face of like it's actually, there's someone mentioned to me, they go, is that still around? I'm like, oh yeah, 2022. A man can't have a goatee if he wears pinstripes. Ridiculous.
Funny enough, we talked about the Mets last week. They've still been good lately. Even, I believe, Pete Alonso walked them off this afternoon. Yeah. But bad news for them, their ace, Max Scherzer, 6 to 8 weeks with an oblique strain in what's been otherwise a pretty picture-perfect start for the other team in New York.
You can always kind of deal with one major injury to your pitching staff, but two is a little tougher to overcome. So the fact that DeGrom hasn't thrown a pitch, no idea when he's coming back, you go, all right, Scherzer's a stud. The guy's getting $43 million a year, and he might actually be worth it. Like, he's outstanding for the Mets, you know, ERA at 2.5, always goes out there, he's going to go pitch deep into games, high strikeout rate. And you look at the rest of their pitchers, Cookie Carrasco's been terrific, McGill was part of that combined no-hitter, but now McGill's hurt, and now Scherzer's hurt, and with the way Logan, that he gestured right away, like he gave the, like, I'm out of here thing, I'm like, oh, that cannot be good. Like, this guy, he knows his body as well as everybody, and everyone knows what a gamer he is and how competitive he is. So if it was just a little bit of soreness, you better believe Max Scherzer was just gutted it out, finished the inning, all right, hey, Skip, I might have to miss a start. For him to go, no, I can't throw another pitch. I'm like, okay, that is a smart guy. Because as he said afterwards, I knew I hurt something, and if I kept going, it would have been worse. So obliques are tricky. They say, like, it's mild to severe oblique strain on the left side, 6 to 8 weeks. Here's the good news for the Mets. You're in first place right now, and I think that there are going to be a first-place team. I picked them at the start of the year. Braves have been underachieving. Phillies are actually playing better now. Their bullpen and defense stink, but their offense is legitimately excellent. And Bryce Harper's been tremendous for them as a guy who has been hurt also, unable to play the field, but been really good as a DH. So I think here's what happens. Max can't come back till Canada Day. If the Mets play 500 baseball until then, they'll probably still be in first place, or if not, tied with the Phillies, or maybe the Braves catch them. So as long as you can tread water 6 to 8 weeks, you're fine. And listen, maybe they'll do better than that. Like, they have a good bullpen. Their offense is really turning around. You mentioned Alonso. He's one of my favorite players. He's in the MVP conversation right now with Manny Machado and Bryce. So nice walk-off today. But yeah, Max Scherzer gets hurt, you got to take a deep breath if you're a Mets fan.
We don't have any reason to talk about the Baltimore Orioles because they're still a putrid franchise right now. 15 wins, 24 losses on the year. But their newly renovated left field wall continues to be a talking point, not only for Aaron Judge and company, but even, I believe, Trey Mancini yesterday came out and said, look, even we don't like it. We have to play here all the time. So I don't need anybody else complaining about it. We're here more than anybody is. That one hasn't sat well after Aaron Judge hit that one that would have been, I think it was a home run in every park except for Camden Yards.
That's exactly right. 29 other parks, that's a home run. Would have had the first three home run game of his career. We've already seen Aaron Judge's first walk-off home run of his career against the Jays. And I believe Booney had a pretty good quip after something about the fact that it wasn't for that made-up wall out there. Yeah, he would have had the three home run game.
Create a park, I believe.
Surprising. Yeah, that's what he said, right? So what's interesting is that, you know, I love Camden Yards. It's probably my favorite ballpark. I mean, this year it's celebrating its 30th anniversary, and it's just gorgeous. When you go there, it is exactly when those retro ballparks were in vogue. It was terrible timing for the Jays, by the way, because they built this hunk of concrete in the Sky Dome in 1989, and then 91, okay, this is the thing. No, actually, the next year, 92, it's, hey, let's combine the old and the new. So you have all the modern amenities, but that beautiful, you know, Boog's Barbecue and the warehouse and right field, every seat's a good seat. The grass is beautiful. Everything about Camden Yards is gorgeous. Like, every time you go there to watch a game, like, man, I love this place. It's up there with, like, PNC Park in Pittsburgh. San Francisco's park is gorgeous. Those are probably the top three. And, of course, Fenway and Wrigley are on their own group. But to your point, Logan, like, why mess with a lot of the buttes? Like, for 30 years, it's been great. Why would you mess with that? Like, I still don't really have a good answer on that. Like, just trying to mix things up. Like, for what? Like I said, the Orioles aren't going to be a contender this year anyway, so you're actually screwing with your own team. Like, maybe you're messing with Aaron Judge, but as you said, you're also screwing up Trey Mancini. So I know there's different nicknames for it right now. The Camden Cliff might be one of them, but I'm sure there's a lot of other words the Orioles right now are using because it's not helping anybody else.
And what was it? They moved it back 30 feet and added, I think, 5 feet of fence or something. That's not a minor change to the left field wall there. That's a major change.
Yeah, and of the two, you'd say, oh, moving 30 feet back is big. I'm like, yeah, it is, but the 5 feet up to me is big. Like, trust me, that's a big difference. When so many balls are wall scrapers, by going up 5 feet, you go, come on, dude, like, are you serious? Like, what are we trying to do here? Like, all of a sudden we're going to make this like Ebbets Field, like a big giant left field out here? So it's definitely a head-scratcher.
What's going on with this? I think Buster Olney had it out there, and everyone's going crazy. What's going on with Yan Soto and the Nationals? I know they're disastrous and they're a bad team, but like, what? That's got to be the most expensive trade in the history if that actually happened.
Exactly. I love Buster, but I don't know if he's got sources here or he's just kind of speculating because everyone knows how great Juan Soto is, right? The guy's unbelievable. He's a top five player in the game. Might be the best left-handed hitter in baseball, and he's got two more years under contract. And the Nationals stink, like you said, Will. And by the way, Field of 2019 is like literally a decade ago. Like, remember when Howie Kendrick and Adam Eaton were celebrating during that stock car exchange there on the bullpen? The fact that Steven Strasburg was dealing, Rendon was hitting big home runs. It literally feels like 10 years ago. Like, the Nationals are awful right now, and they're not going to be good anytime soon. So Buster's speculating, listen, they could get sold. Why not divest yourself of this major asset? I just can't imagine any team trading Juan Soto. He's too good. Why would you trade this guy? He's unbelievable. Like, I know the team stinks, so you trade him for other assets, but you'll never get fair value for a guy like that. He is such a superstar. Now, the only way I could see it is maybe literally 2 years from now, his contract is coming up, and Boris, who he's represented by, Scott Boras, super agent, says, listen, there's zero chance he's re-signing. You might as well trade him because there's no way he's staying. Like, you could offer him $500 million and he's gone. Then I think the Nationals would say, okay, I guess we'll have to trade him and get some value. But 2.5 years left still under contract, that's way too premature for me if I'm a Nationals fan.
Yeah, and they'll never get the proper value, as you just mentioned. Just quickly before we move off from baseball, I'd be crazy if I didn't ask you about the Jays. What's your takeaways there? It's been a little bit of a dip here. They've run into a nice break. I know they lost yesterday, but not bad when you can play Seattle and you talk about awful, play the Reds in the same week. So the Jays maybe with a chance to get back on track here. But what's going on with Toronto after they looked early in the year to be a team that could maybe push the Yankees, but it's been a bit of a downslide here for Toronto.
Yeah, they got pushed around by the Yankees. There's no question about it. New York went 6-3 against Toronto. They don't face each other again for another month. I think they only face each other 7 times in the second half. So it was definitely front loaded with a lot of Toronto and New York. And ultimately for the Jays, I think it was just a tough schedule. Like, it wasn't just the Yankees. Look at the rest of their schedule. It was pretty challenging. Now it will get easier, as you mentioned, with the Mariners and facing the Reds, which is just horrific. But I think the big difference has been their starting pitching. When I looked at their numbers, their stars really have been struggling. There's been two guys. It's been Gausman and Manoah who have been sensational, and everybody else. So the fact that Kikuchi has seemed to turn things around last three starts, he has been much better. You know, hopefully they'll get some more out of Hyunjin Ryu. And Barrios was great in his last start. So, again, you'd love to have five. But if you can have four good starters, or Barrios can go back to being who they think he is, which is 1A, 1B. Like, either he's your ace or he's your number two. And you pair him with Gausman and Manoah, and all of a sudden this rotation looks a lot better. And I think that was really the key for them, was getting that starting pitching figured out. So if Barrios can deliver and perform better, their offense will come. It's surprising just how much their offense has struggled, because there's so many stars in that team. But Bo Bichette, quiet start. Vlad Jr., 15-game hit streak, but only one of those games is a multi-hit game. And I think only one home run over that stretch. It's a little bit misleading. Chapman's been a disaster. The guy's hit like a .183. I mean, you have to hit your weight. I know he's great defensively, but I think he has like a 640 OPS. And that's awful for a guy that they're expecting much bigger things from. Teoscar Hernandez was hurt. Since he's come back, he's done nothing. Lourdes Gurriel has been underachieving. So there's been a lot of issues with this offense, which was surprising to me. I love Alejandro Kirk, short and stocky. Whether or not he's catching or DH, I love seeing him. And I think he can hit the ball a while. But, yeah, I think for the Jays, the biggest thing was their starting pitching, and their offense just has been awfully inconsistent. And I think that's the big surprise. Everyone thought, oh, the Jays, they're going to mash. That hasn't been the story so far, except for Springer. He's been great.
In the entertainment industry, it's St. Logan, before he brought you on, it's a little bit dry right now in movies, isn't it? Like, a little bit, last 2 weeks have been kind of dead here.
Getting into summer season, Adnan, you know it.
Exactly. This is the calm before the storm. So the spring movies are kind of trotting out. But you're right, on Cinephile, like this next week, I'm just going to have to do like shows. I'm going to be like, all right, here's my mid-season review of Better Call Saul, mid-season review of Barry, a few episodes of Severance and Apple Plus, because at the movie theater, I'm not going to pay $13 to go see Downton Abbey. If they added a W, maybe I'd go. If there was, it was two W's, Downton Abbey, maybe I'd go. But yeah, that's not to my taste. But everyone, of course, excited for Top Gun. As much as I find Cruise loathsome, it is getting great reviews. So that's going to be Memorial Day weekend,
your favorite actor,
Victoria Day weekend back home. Yeah, my least favorite actor. So I hear the action's going to leave. So hopefully it gets blown up at some point. But I'll be cheering in the theater. All right, Top Gun killed. That's great.
Well, you're a Miles Teller guy, though, aren't you?
I do love Miles Teller, and in fact, I DM'd him because we follow each other on Twitter, and I covered him celebrity softball in San Diego a few years ago. Great guy. Started talking movies. Love Whiplash, and he promised me he'd hit a home run. This is like Babe Ruth promising the kid in the hospital, I'm going to go deep. I'm calling the game, and Miles Teller hit a home run. It was great. He was so cocky. As he ran on the base, he looked at me because I told you I got one. This is unbelievable. Had him on Cinephile, and so I DM'd him 3 days ago. I'm like, hey, man, I watched The Offer, which is a show about the making of The Godfather.
Ask you about this because this is right up your alley.
Phenomenal. So I watched all 10 episodes. I'm like, Miles, by the way, he's a big Eagles fan. So, Will, I started with, hey, man, I know you're as excited as me about A.J. Brown. More importantly, watching The Offer, you were killed as Al Ruddy. Would love to be on my podcast. I'm now doing it with Levitar, blah, blah, blah. Let me know. The guy, by the way, it's the Cannes Film Festival. You can look this up. Top Gun just had their premiere on the red carpet. That's where he is. He got back to me within a day. I'm going to text you guys afterwards. He literally wrote, hey, I'm in. Would love to come on your show. Here's my publicist. Talk soon. Miles. I'm like, yes. So, hopefully, wow. Miles Teller coming soon to Cinephile.
Love it. Well, I mean, Logan's very excited for Chippendale Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus tomorrow. But until then, we'll wait for
Top
Gun.
That's the comeback no one's talking about, Chippendale. Not as good as The Dancers, up there.
Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah, certain people are thinking of The Dancers. Like, wait, a shirtless guy with a bow tie on.
Yeah, no. This is the...
These are the furry ones.
I believe it's the it's like a mix of live action and animation, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Will Arnett, though. What did you think Canadian of the flavor.
Yeah, we love Will Arnett.
Go Leafs. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what did you think of the bad guys, Will?
I haven't seen it yet, actually. I didn't get a chance to go, and then I went to Hawaii, so I haven't had a chance yet. But when I do see it, I'll be texting you, and it's almost at the point now where I'll just wait and not pay theater money to go see it. But I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell, fantastic. I mean, no matter what, this summer, you're going to get superhero movies and kids' movies. Those are guaranteed.
Well, Logan's, yeah, he's very excited.
I'm always excited for movies. You know how it is.
And the fact that Logan said those are the furry ones, I'm like, wait, are this like hairy chested ones? What's going on here?
That's a different room.
Whoa.
You're going to pay more for that, man.
This is public radio here. Unbelievable.
Things took a turn.
I'm excited for that text. You're going to show me how good a guy Miles Teller is.
And I thought we moved away from Steinberg on this program, but apparently not.
No.
Yeah.
It's all good. Adnan, good stuff, man. As always, I know you got to run. You got another. You got 900 radio hits today. So thank you for the time, and we'll talk next week.
Vancouver happening within seconds. Logan, Will, thank you, fellas.
See you, pal.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Welcome back to the program. Hour number three rolls on. If you missed any of the program today, don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. Never miss a moment. Thanks to Adnan Virk, who joined us off the top of this hour. Great conversation as always with Mr. Virk. It's Will Nault and Logan Gordon along with you. Two games on the Stanley Cup playoff schedule. Some stuff happening off the ice, away from the playoffs, but kind of directly involved with the playoffs. Plus, of course, the Blue Jays in action as well. Not today, but they're making their way to what should be a fun weekend series against the team who's won 11 games all year. So maybe some runs scored this weekend for the Blue Jays. But why don't we let the guy who reads the headlines read the headlines? Logan Gordon has got the latest across the sports world. Logan, where are we starting?
So the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight, Will. Two more game twos in round two tonight. We'll start with the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay with a 1-0 series lead thanks to a 4-1 win in Game 1. Florida going to need to stay out of the penalty box and improve their power play in this one, Will. The Lightning went 3-for-6 with the man advantage in Game 1, while the Panthers were 0-for-3 and are 0-for-21 in the Stanley Cup playoffs after tying the Nashville Predators for 5th in the NHL's regular season playoff percentage at 24.4%. Definitely looking to improve the special teams if you're the Florida Panthers. Tampa Bay, of course, still without forward Braden Point. He has been ruled out for the second straight game with a lower body injury that he sustained in Game 7 of the Round 1 series, Will, against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, Braden Point, that's going to be a big loss for this Lightning team, I think, as the series goes on. They were able to get past it in Game 1. Carter Verhaeghe, a game-time decision on the other side. But I do think as we get into, you know, Game 4, maybe even Game 5 of this series, it's probably when you're really going to feel the absence of Braden Point. It kind of feels at this point like we're not going to see him again in this series. Maybe in the Eastern Conference Final, if the Lightning are able to advance. But the way that that injury happened in Game 7, the fact that he tried it right after and really couldn't skate on it, does not seem like we're nearing any sort of return for Braden Point. So curious to see how that affects the Lightning as this series goes on. Is it going to be something they feel a little more than what they're doing right now? I think that's going to be the case, but we'll certainly watch it as we continue on here in this series. And as for Game 2, you mentioned it leading in. I think the biggest storyline is goaltending. Vasilevsky, although he's been pretty good here the last three games, overall in the playoffs has not looked as good as we've seen him in the last two runs to a Stanley Cup championship. But if history tells us anything, Vasilevsky gets better as the playoffs go on. So you wonder if Florida can get to him here at some point in this game tonight and maybe even get some momentum. But you can't go down 0-2 losing both games on home ice. So this is, again, not must win because it's not 3-0 in the series. But Florida loses both home games. I don't like their chances to win 4 of the next 5 against the Lightning.
Tampa Bay and Florida, your early game tonight. It's a 5 o'clock start on Sportsnet and CBC. That one will be followed by the St. Louis Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. Colorado will try to win their 6th straight game to open up the postseason, which would tie the team record. They would also give them a 2-0 series lead in the best of 7 against the Blues. Ryan O'Reilly can set a Blues record, Will, if he is able to score in his 6th straight playoff game. Colorado won 3-2 in overtime in Game 1, despite an NHL postseason career-high 51 saves by goaltender Jordan Binnington, 12 of those coming in overtime before Josh Manson eventually was able to beat him for the game winner. St. Louis certainly doesn't want to head home down 2-0 in this series.
No, they don't, but they also need to help out their goaltender, because as good as Binnington was in Game 1, I don't know how long you can hold the dam against what is a really, really good offensive club in Colorado. So I think St. Louis has got to be really dialed in on their defensive details in front of Jordan Binnington, because even in that Game 1, a lot of backdoor opportunities that were wide open, a couple of fans on shots that allowed Jordan Binnington to keep it tight, and also a lot of goalposts that helped Jordan Binnington keep it close. And we said it earlier in the show, and that's kind of my biggest curiosity going into this game tonight. This is kind of that breaking point for the Avalanche. This is, okay, how much have you learned from the last couple of playoff losses? If you remember back to last season, it felt like the Avalanche were in cruise control towards potentially a Stanley Cup final berth, certainly a Western Conference final berth, as they had a 1-0 series lead on Vegas. They dominated Game 1 of that series and probably was very similar to what we saw in the Game 1 of this series in terms of, if Jordan Binnington doesn't make any saves and doesn't have the goalposts, we're probably talking about a very similar 6-1 or 7-1 victory for the Avalanche. But that wasn't the case. They win it in overtime. But now, can the Avalanche take that next step? Can they win both games at home? And can they not allow St. Louis to feel good about themselves going back to St. Louis for Game 3 on Saturday? A big, big game for the Avalanche, and I think both teams will be better, but I really truly feel like maybe not pressure, but you're certainly wanting to see if there's any lessons learned from previous playoff losses for the Colorado Avalanche tonight.
Continuing with the NHL news, award season continues. We got the finalists today for the Jack Adams Award. Andrew Brunette of the Florida Panthers, Gerard Gallant of the Rangers, and Daryl Sutter of the Calgary Flames, the finalists for the Jack Adams Award, given annually to the coach who has contributed the most to his team's success. The winner announced June 2nd during the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We'll start with Andrew Brunette. He took over the Panthers after Joel Quenneville resigned on October 8th, would guide Florida to records in wins and points, and the President's Trophy for the best record in the regular season. Gerard Gallant, he's won this award before. He guided the Rangers to 52 wins this year. That's the second most in their history. His first season with the Rangers, they are the 10th team in NHL history and the first since 2011-2012 to finish with at least 50 points and 100 points, 50 wins, excuse me, and 100 points, and have a 50-goal score, a 90-point score, and a goalie with at least 36 wins. The Rangers had 27 comeback wins this season, second in the NHL behind the Florida Panthers. He won the award back in 2017-18 when he was the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. Also, Will, he's been around this a lot. He was a finalist for this award when he was coaching the Florida Panthers back in 2015-2016. So Gerard Gallant, no secret to the or no surprise not really to be around the Jack Adams Award. He's done that throughout his entire career. And last but not least, the man behind the bench here in Calgary, Daryl Sutter, helping the Flames to a 50-win season. They won the Pacific Division in his first full season of his second stint as coach. They were 111 points second in Flames history behind the 117 points put up by the 1989 Stanley Cup winning champions. He was a finalist with the Flames in 2003-2004, guiding them to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Daryl asked about the finalist nomination earlier today.
Not the best coach, first off. Right? If the coaches voted on the best coach every year, you'd see quite a bit different list the last 15 years. So the way I look at it is that I don't need that on my resume. Some guys do. So I'd rather see young guys win it, quite honest. Or guys that have maybe got a raw deal somewhere. Like a guy like Gerard, got a raw deal in Florida, got a raw deal in Vegas. Oh, if I had a vote, I know who I'd vote for.
Pretty typical Daryl when it comes to being asked about the nod as one of the finalists for the Jack Adams Award. But well-deserved on all three fronts today, I would say, Will.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look back on it, it may be surprising to some, but Daryl Sutter's never won the Jack Adams Award. His brother Brian has won it, as he did so as a head coach of the St. Louis Blues in 90-91. But yeah, Daryl Sutter never winning this award, but as you just heard him say right there, it doesn't necessarily actually go to the best coach. It goes to the coach who has maybe best exceeded expectations. Gerard Gallant won this award, of course, in 2018 with the Vegas Golden Knights in their inaugural season, winning 50-plus games. I don't think it's a surprise to see him back here. He's had done a wonderful job with the Rangers, and really every stop he's been in, he's had success, and hasn't won a Stanley Cup, but got to a Cup final that 2018 year with the Golden Knights. Andrew Brunette, I mean, what more can you say? First-time head coach, spent years as an assistant. Certainly did learn from one of the best in Joel Quenneville the last couple of seasons, but some turmoil there early. They were 7-0 when he took over. He's coached 75 games with that team, and they won the President's Trophy, and here they are in round two. I know this voting was done at the end of the regular season, so what happens in the playoffs has no indication or no impact on this award, but I don't think that we should be discounting what Andrew Brunette has done, despite the fact that the Panthers came into the year with pretty high expectations. I don't know if many had them winning the President's Trophy, so congratulations to him as well. And maybe it's because we're closest to it, but I just don't know if there's a in terms of historically what this trophy's been given out to, I don't know if there is an easier selection or a a bigger slam dunk than Daryl Sutter. I don't think even the most optimistic Flame fans, nobody had them winning the division. Nobody had them having the second best season in franchise history. So I just can't look past the job that Daryl Sutter's done. He'd be getting my vote, and I'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't the winner when they announced the winners during the Stanley Cup Final on June 1st.
So Daryl Sutter, Andrew Brunette, and Gerard Gallant, your finalists for the Jack Adams Award. Finally gotten that one done today. We'll continue to see a couple more awards yet to be handed out. We'll get you those ones as soon as we can. And as Will said, early in June there, we will get your winners for those awards. That's the third Flame, I believe. You got Markstrom, Vezina, Lindholm, Selke, and now Daryl for the Jack Adams. So Flames well represented in all of these now.
Mm-hmm.
Sticking with hockey, World Championships continuing in Finland. It was a game day for Team Canada. It would wind up being a 6-3 win this afternoon against Kazakhstan. Things got a little bit interesting during the first period. Kazakhstan would take a 2-1 lead, but Canada battles back. Dylan Cousins with a pair of goals. You've also got Drake Batherson, Adam Lowry, Damon Severson in there. Excuse me, Cousins finished off the hat trick late in this one. So 6-3 win, Dylan Cousins with the hat trick. Small scare for Canada, Will, but they come out on top in this battle against Kazakhstan.
Yeah, a bit of a weird game. It was one that was, you know, I think it was 1-1, 2-2, 3-3 even maybe at one point, or maybe Canada had a 4-2 lead before Kazakhstan made it 4-3. But yeah, really, really tight for a majority of the game, and then Canada kind of broke through and was able to pull away in the third period. But give credit to Kazakhstan. They played hard today. Everyone obviously loves playing against Canada and sees it as a big, big test. But this is a slow-burning tournament. It is one where it has a very large round robin. It's going to be a while before we get to the medal round and the knockout stage, but yeah, Canada, I think, trying to find their groove. And as Lou has mentioned a couple of times, looking forward to Saturday when they play the Swiss. So they have the easier group of the two at this year's tournament. But the Swiss should be a pretty tough test Saturday. I believe that's their next round robin game.
Yeah, 21st here Saturday. They still got three games remaining in this round robin. They got, you mentioned the Swiss there on Saturday. They've got a game against Denmark and then France next week on the 24th. So next Tuesday, Canada's going to wrap up round-robin action. So still three more outings for this group. Other finals from today, Germany downs Denmark 1-0, U.S. 3-0 over Great Britain, and Czechia over Latvia. That one, a 5-1 final. Move to baseball, Will. The off day today for the Toronto Blue Jays after they lost their last game against the Seattle Mariners to close out that series. They'll be back in action tomorrow against the lowly Reds, who have just 11 wins on the season. Expected to see the return of Hyunjin Ryu to the starters rotation for Toronto in that one. So we'll talk about that as we get closer to game time tomorrow. As for games today, a lighter schedule for the MLB with 8 games, plenty of finals already. Orioles upset the Yankees 9-6, Padres 2-0 over the Phillies, and the Reds down the Guardians 4-2. Mets get a walk-off home run for Pete Alonso in the 10th inning to beat the Cardinals 7-6. That was the good news for them today. The bad news, Max Scherzer out 6 to 8 weeks with an oblique strain. The Mets well in control in the NL East, but when you lose a guy like Scherzer for up to 2 months, well, that's going to hurt your rotation, and that's a team already missing Jake DeGrom. So no DeGrom and now no Scherzer for the foreseeable future for the Mets.
Yeah, and as Adnan talked about with us earlier this hour, easier to lose one starting pitcher when you lose two, and two big ones in DeGrom and Scherzer, a little bit tougher to overcome. But the good news for the Mets is they've, again, it's early in the year for one, but for two, they've got a pretty big lead atop that division, and if they can just play around 500 or even a game or two below when they get those guys back, they're still probably going to be in pretty good shape. So not necessarily sky is falling, but when you lose two very quality pitchers like those two, it's not going to be the easiest of roads the next couple of months with the Mets.
Some PGA Championships results opening round today, Will, from Southern Hills Championship Course in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Your leader, Rory McIlroy, shooting a 5-under today. Will Zalatoris right behind him at 4-under. Matt Kuchar, 3-under. And, of course, lots of people curious where Tiger Woods would be. He's
not
in the field. No, not a factor. An opening round, 74, puts Tiger at 4-over par for the day. He talked post-match about his opening round.
Well, I did not hit a lot of good iron shots. I drove it well, but my iron shots were not very good. I didn't get the ball very close. I got off to a great start and didn't keep it going. And I really didn't give myself any looks for birdie. You know, I was struggling trying to get the ball on the green with, and I missed quite a few iron shots both ways. So it was a frustrating day.
Frustrating day for Tiger. It's going to be in tight if he wants to make the cut there tomorrow. Will said that his leg was bothering a bit today. Not a great showing for the Canadians either. Adam Hadwin tied for 95th. He shot just one better than Tiger. An opening round, 3-over 73.
Yeah, Corey Connors had a tough day as well. He's still on the course, I believe. But Mackenzie Hughes, 7-over. Corey Connors, last check, 4-over through 11. So it has not been a very good day for the Canadians, which is disappointing. Of course, those are the only three in the field heading in. But cool to see Rory McIlroy atop the leaderboard. Of course, he was a big story at Augusta in major number one last month. And many believing with this opening round, perhaps a chance to go wire to wire. We'll watch Rory over the next couple of days to see where he ends up.
Last but not least, game two, Miami Heat, Boston Celtics from Miami. Miami looking to take a 2-0 series lead. This one, a 6:30 tip-off on Sportsnet 360 tonight if you want to watch some basketball. Good news for the Celtics. Some reinforcements, Will, for game two. Al Horford will be available after clearing health and safety protocols. Celtics also expected to have starting guard Marcus Smart back. He was ruled out of the series opener with a foot sprain. He's listed probable for tonight.
I think both, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I think both conference finals in the NBA should be a lot of fun to watch. It's still early. We'll see what happens. Injuries have become the bigger story or the biggest story in the NBA playoffs, which is unfortunate because you want the stars to be in action and playing. But it's continuing to be the bigger story and the one that you kind of lead with going into these games, which is unfortunate because you want the stars to play.
This is your Thursday headlines.
Thank you, sir. I mentioned it before, no Blue Jays baseball today. They're back in action tomorrow when they begin a weekend series against the Cincinnati Reds. If you missed anything from the show today, don't forget to find the Big Show podcast wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon. The Big Show can be found on any podcast platform. Thanks to Adnan Verk, thanks to Peter Labardius, and thanks to you for listening. As always, don't forget as well a fun CFL chat with Justin Dunk. No missed time for CFL training camps or for the season. It's going to start on time for the first time since 2019, a 7-year CBA agreement between the CFL and the CFLPA. We're back again tomorrow on a game day. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.